Thank you for the invitation. Today I'm going to talk about quantum metrological limits in noisy environments. And first I'll give you some background motivation, basically what is quantum metrology and what is the noise model we are considering. So to summarize in one sentence, quantum metrology is the science of estimation in quantum systems. So what does it mean? Here are a few examples. The first one would be optical interferometry. Basically, it describes a situation where you want to estimate the difference between two optical paths, and you can use that to do, for example, a gravitational wave detection. And it's kind of a very important thing in modern quantum technology. And then another example that is very important is atomic clock. So it basically describes a situation where you have a bunch of atoms, and then you try to use the state of this atom to detect some laser frequency. And sometimes, actually, people can show that if you allow some entanglement between these atoms, it can boost your sensitivity. So this is kind of the quantum enhanced ingredient in this experiment. And then people also consider many more different platforms. One example would be like nitrogen vacancy center. You use a nitrogen vacancy in diamond to try to detect small electric field or magnetic field. So a common feature in all these experiments is that there is some unknown parameter in the system you want to detect, and then you detect it by using a preparing quantum state and do some quantum measurements. So this is what I call quantum metrology in this talk. And of course, there are many other that I won't cover here. So basically, since this is like a theoretical talk, I'm not going to focus on a specific physical platform. And instead, I'm going to consider this abstract, perhaps a little bit oversimplified model, which is the following. So you can imagine you have a quantum system, and then it evolves over time. And then the unknown parameter can be described as some quantum dynamics. So basically, you have a Hamiltonian in your system, and then the unknown parameter could be in the Hamiltonian. And then basically, what you can control in the experiment, I assume here, is the input state, the gray part on this diagram here, and the control part, which is what type of like pulses you can do during the experiment. And then finally, you can do a quantum measurement in the end. So what you cannot control here is the signal and noise. So basically, given a particular signal and noise, how do you design the input state, the control, and the measurement to maximize your sensitivity with respect to the unknown parameter? So this is the subject of this talk. So what are the current opportunities and challenges in this field? I'll start with a simple example, again, the interferometry. So basically, you have like 50-50 beam splitter, and then there's some phase you want to detect. So the simplest case is you just inject one photon into one of the beam splitter, and then the phase can cause a phase difference between this 1-0 and 0-1 state. So basically, I use 1-0 to represent a photon in the upper port and 0-1 to represent a photon in the lower port. So this is like the fog state. And then you can see that there's some kind of amplitude which encodes the information of this phase in the interferometry. And then in the end, you just do the measurement. You try to detect where the photon is. And the property of detecting the photon in the upper and lower part is given by this sine function or cosine function of phi over 2. So you just keep repeating the same measurement, and then in the end, you can get a rough estimate of how large this probability is. And then based on this information, you can use the invert function from the probability to the original of the exact value of phi, and then it allows you to perform experiment to get a rough estimate of how large phi is. And another important feature you can see here is the more precise you can estimate this p, the more precise you can get for the original value of phi. So this is just a simple paradigm showing how you do like quantum metrology in practice. And because we are considered like quantum enhanced metrology, so then the question to ask is, what happens if you have like n photons? And then what is the optimal state you can input here? So let's start with the basic case where you just have like n uncorrelated photons. So it is then exactly equivalent to the situation you repeated the previous experiment n times. So basically, you are going to get a binomial distribution at the output end. So it would be equivalent to like you flip the same coin like for n times because every photon is uncorrelated. And then what we care about is the scaling of the estimation error with respect to the number of photons we have. So this can be easily derived with nothing quantum, with just classical probability theory. You can show that the estimation error is going to be proportional to 1 over square root of n. So it's just governed by the central limit theorem. So basically, as the number of photons increases, the estimation error is going to decreases as proportional to this function. And this is sometimes called the standard quantum limit. It is kind of one type of metrologic limit that can be achieved even without quantum entanglement. Okay, so now what's more interesting is what happens if you are allowed to have entangled state as the input. So here I give you an example of noon state. So I'm not going to discuss how to prepare a noon state. It's actually a pretty difficult task in experiment, but I'm going to discuss what happens if you already have the noon state. So what is noon state? Noon state is describe the superposition of two quantum states, one with n photons in the upper port and the other one with n photons in the lower port. So basically, if you write it as using this Brocket representation, it means you either have n photons in the upper port or n photons in the lower port. And then you can immediately observe that the phase accumulates n times faster compared to the one photon case if you use this noon state. So basically you have this phase n phi here instead of just phi. So and then the output distribution here is going to have some kind of quantum interference, like you have you would have negative and positive amplitude, and then you sum them together. So basically, in the end, you can after a few calculations, you can show that the probability of getting even number of photons in the output port is going to be cosine square function of n phi over 2. And it is exactly the same as before if you put like n equal to 1 in this case. And again, if you make the same plot, you can see that there's some kind of oscillation going on over here. But if you always have this assumption that phi is like a very small number, it's very close to the original, then basically you can infer the value of phi from this part over here. So this is a plot of like four photons. And the good thing is that now the estimation error becomes proportional to 1 over n. So you can see that the reason is that the slope here is like n time larger than before. So that's why the estimation error becomes have this 1 over n scaling over here. So it is quadratically better than the previous case where you only have the standard quantum limit. And this is what people usually call the Heisenberg limit. And it is, in fact, the best you can do. So you cannot go beyond this limit. So it is kind of the ultimate thing people chase in the quantum metrology experiments. Okay. So that's just everything is noiseless in the previous case. And in reality, there might be noise in the experiment. And this is the focus of this talk. So here, I'm going to consider the photon loss error. So photon loss error can be sort of simulated using this picture. So basically you have one photon passing here and then it either transmits through the beam splitter or it is reflected into a different direction. So, and then you can assume this eta here to be the transmissivity of this beam slitter, and then it is smaller than one. So if it is one, then it represents a noiseless case. And then you can write down, again, the quantum state if the input state is a new state. So you are going to find out here that output quantum state is going to have two parts. The first part is a noiseless new state. So it's as if there's no noise at all. But then there is a coefficient, which is eta to the power of n, in front of it. And then the other part is just some quantum state, which is completely independent of the value of phi. So this is actually really bad news, because you can see that if eta is a constant, and then if you take n to be like some large number, then the first term is going to be infinitesimally small, so exponentially small. So it basically means that the estimation error is going to grow exponentially with n. Instead of decaying with n, it's actually going to grow with n due to the effect of quantum noise. So, and then basically in my talk, I'm just going to discuss like if you can prepare arbitrary input state and measurement and controls, and what are the best thing you can do. Is that definitely this exponentially small, exponentially large error. So this is just going to be the focus of talk of this talk, to discuss how to deal with noise in this quantum metrology experiment. Okay, so basically the question to ask here is, can quantum controls, for example, like quantum error correction, be helpful in this case? Okay, so now I'm just going to move on the first result, a part of this talk, which I call a quantum channel estimation with arbitrary quantum controls. So basically this is the sort of abstract of the previous simple thought experiment. So in general, what happens in the quantum systems is you have the quantum signal, the parameter you want to detect, encoded in some quantum operation. And it is what we call quantum channel here. So I use this big letter E to represent the quantum channel, and omega is the unknown parameter we want to estimate. So basically, this is the quantum signal we are considering. And the additional thing is that there might be some quantum noise in it. For example, if the system is noiseless, then this quantum channel is like a unitary operation. So so it's just one Hamiltonian and then no noise at all. But then if it is like a general quantum channel or a CPDB map, then it can be like an arbitrary like quantum channel thing. So basically, it contains both the signal and the noise. And I assume the omega parameter is the thing you want to estimate. And for example, you can use like this cross operator to represent this quantum channel. And then you can assume like each of the cross operator is differentiable with respect to omega. It's just the only assumption we need here. And then you can also define what is Heisenberg limit and standard quantum limit. So then it depends on like how many copies of the quantum channel you use in the experiment. So for example, here I use like n copies of the quantum channel. And then I align them together, but then I allow arbitrary input quantum state, arbitrary control, and arbitrary measurement. I also allow this sort of ancillary system where there's no noise or signal at all to assist the experiment. So in this picture, which I call sequential strategy, you can define the Heisenberg limit to be the situation where the estimation error is proportional to 1 over n. And then the standard quantum limit is worse, and then it describes a situation where the estimation precision is 1 over square root of n. So this is a different strategy that people usually use also. So this strategy describes the case where each quantum channel acts in parallel on a many-body input state. So there's no control here, but everything is aligned in parallel instead of sequential, and it is actually can be simulated by sequential strategy. That's why I put this subset sign over here. So basically, now I'm going to ask the question: for which type of quantum channel you can achieve the Heisenberg limit, and for which type of channel you can only achieve the standard quantum limit? So that is the main question to ask and answer here. So below I'm going to show that actually first I'm going to show there's only two type of limit in this system. So it is not trivial because you can, for example, have a different type of limit, but then we can show that it is not possible. The only two type of limit in the system is the Heisenberg limit and the standard quantum limit. And you can use a simple criterion called HNKS criterion to decide which regime you are in. So you either have a standard Heisenberg limit after you optimize over all the quantum strategy, or you would have a standard quantum limit no matter which type of quantum strategy you use. And I guess another thing that was worth mentioning here is that you can even optimize the coefficient of this estimation precision. So if you don't care about only the scaling, but also the coefficient asymptotically, you can also do so by optimizing over a bunch of quantum error correction protocol. But I'm not going to focus on this below. So what exactly is this HNKS condition, which allows us to determine the Heisenberg limit and the standard quantum limit for a quantum channel? So it is a simple algebraic condition of a quantum channel. Basically, you just need to define an operator called the Hamiltonian of a quantum channel, and then the span of operator called the cross span of the quantum channel. So this is the exact expression. It looks very complicated. You don't need to remember what exactly it is, but basically the Hamiltonian is a Hermitian operator, and then it describes how the quantum channel depend on this parameter. So you can see here there's some kind of derivative with respect to the parameter here. So this is the Hamiltonian of the quantum channel. And then the crossband of the quantum channel, it does not depend on the signal. So basically you just take omega to be zero in this case, and then you calculate the span of this operator, which is ki dagger kj. So k here is the cross operator of the quantum channel. And then after you do this calculation, you can basically try to calculate whether the Hamiltonian is inside the crossband or not. And then if it is not, if the answer is no, you can get a Heisenberg limit. And then if the answer is yes, you are stuck with the standard quantum limit. So that's the conclusion here. And you can also visualize this using this sketch here, like S is a space, and then you must have some component of H that is perpendicular to this space in order to get to the Heisenberg limit. And then you can do so using a technique called quantum error correction. So here's one example. You can imagine a quantum channel where you have this signal governed by the Pauli Z rotation. So Z here is the sigma Z, the Pauli Z operator, and then omega is the thing you want to estimate. And then you also have some quantum noise where the probability is P. So basically with 1 over P, you don't have any noise. But then with P, you would have some kind of noise operator, which I call E here. So you can discuss a situation where E is equal to Pauli Z operator. In that case, the crossband would contain identity and Z, which also covers the Hamiltonian of the system. So in this case, the Heisenberg limit is not achievable at all. You're stuck with the standard quantum limit. But then in this case, you are going to recover the Heisenberg limit using quantum error correction if the error is a Pauli X operator, like a B3P noise. So so here is exactly how you achieve it. So this is a noiseless case, but I'm going to move on to the noisy case later. So in the noiseless case, you just prepare input state, which is superposition between 0 and 1. And then the phase accumulated like n times if you just using the sequential protocol. That's how you achieve the Heisenberg limit. It's the same as the example I talked before. And this is the parallel situation. You just have the GHZ state as the input, and then the phase also accumulate like n time compared to like just 1 qubit, and then you achieve the Heisenberg limit. And so what's interesting is the situation where you have Pauli Z Hamiltonian B-flip noise. So in this case, you can use error correction to achieve the Heisenberg limit. This is what I promised, and here's how you do it. So basically, you try to use a code called repetition code to do the encoding. So So it's like in the input, you have a superposition between 0, 0, and 1, 1. And the second 0 and 1 is in some ancillary system without noise or signal. And then if an error occurs, you just detect the parity between the system and the ancilla, and then you just do the error correction based on the detection outcome. And after all that, you can basically correct every error in the system because this bifilm noise is completely correctable in the system. And in the end, you can completely recover the previous case as if you have no noise at all. That's how you achieve the Heisenberg limit. And then I guess in another situation is, again, you have this parallel strategy, but with the GHZ state as an input. And what's interesting is that this GHZ state is also a repetition code. So basically, you just use the majority voting, you try to do error correction based on whether the number of zero is larger than the number of one, or vice versa, and then you can use that to determine the state of the system. And that's also how you achieve the Heisenberg limit in the end. Okay, so, and what I want to emphasize here is that if you have dephasing noise, you can no longer achieve the standard the Heisenberg limit. You are going to stuck with standard quantum limit. And the thing you can do is simple. You just prepare an input state, and which is a product state as an input, and then you just prepare and measure, and then you repeat it n times, you achieve the standard quantum limit. So we don't need entanglement to achieve the standard quantum limit. Any question? So, I think for the sake of time, I'm going to skip the proof technique part and move on to the second part of this talk. So basically, the second part of the talk is to discuss what happens if you don't have a full quantum control in your system. So previously, I described like two quantum strategies. One is a sequential strategy, and the other one is a parallel strategy. And they can sometimes be very strong. So here's what I mean. Like in the sequential strategy, you assume like you have this type of noiseless ancilla in the system, and this can be actually highly demanding a resource in the system. You need to do like error correction within itself, and it is not something we want in the experiment. And then the other thing is that you need to do like general CBDB control over here. So you need, for example, if you want to do error correction, you need to detect and measure and then rotate the system and so on and so on. So it is also like some resource that is not really available in the current technology. And then if you want to do a parallel strategy, then the thing is you actually need a very large system size, and then you also need a long-range entanglement. As in the input state, which is also some kind of input state which is hard to prepare in real life. So then the second part of this talk is to try to see what happens if you cannot do quantum error correction. Basically, you cannot have this two type of full quantum control in your system, what's going to happen. And then you can consider basically like some strategy without the assistance of ancilla. For example, the most restricted strategy is the case where you only have the channel and then some kind of unital controls in the system. And you don't have the ancilla. So this is a very restricted control, and only use this control, you cannot do quantum error correction. And then the other strategy is the CBDB control. So it is a bit more general than the previous case, but then the thing is you also don't have noiseless ancilla in this case. So it is the control only acts on the system itself. You don't have the ancillary system. And you can also consider a situation where you have some kind of ancillary system, but not too large. So I can assume that the ancillary system is like constant size. So it's just like 1 or 2 qubit. And then you can only do like this unitary control in your system. So you can see that with all this type of quantum controls, so you actually cannot do quantum error correction if you have a single qubit channel estimation problem given here. So basically, what I'm going to talk about in the next two slides is the kind of estimation limit specifically for qubit channels. So I'm going to discuss what is the metrological limit. It's no longer going to be Heisenberg limit and standard quantum limit. It's actually going to be a much more difficult structure over here. So, but before I do that, I need to classify a qubit channel. So the different estimation limit is different for a different type of qubit channel. So the simplest channel is unitary channel. You just have the unitary evolution in the system. And then this is actually the most sensitive thing we can have in experiment. It gives you the best possible metrological limit. And then I can also have the defacing class channel. You can forget about this complicated structure, but basically here, I mean, you have some kind of defacing noise in the system, but then you can also rotate the system before and after the defacing noise. So this gives you the defacing class channel. And then finally, if the channel is not the first two type, you are going to stuck with the final type, which is the strictly contractive channel. So it basically means that for any input quantum state, the trace norm between the states is going to decrease after you apply the quantum channel in the system. So here's the result. I'm showing this table where here I have all these strategies for different type of quantum channels. So the first one is for unitary channel. And the second one is for defacing class channel, but with one condition that needs to be satisfied. So defacing class channel have two types, and finally, strictly contractive channel. And then I also have the summary of all the quantum strategy you can perform. The first one is the full quantum control where you are allowed to have sequential and parallel strategy. And the second one is a case where you don't have ancilla, so it's ancilla free, but you have unitary control. And then the third one is ancilla free, but general CBDB control. And finally, you have bounded ancilla, but unital control. So here's the result here. If you just focus on the first column over here, it is actually what I've already introduced in the previous part. So it describes the situation where you have full quantum control. And then basically you only need to determine whether the HNKS condition is satisfied or not, because if it is satisfied, you get the Heisenberg limit, and then it's not satisfied, you get the standard quantum limit. And basically you can show that for all these two type of channel, the condition fails, so get standard quantum limit. And I'm sorry, but you might find the notation a bit confusing. Here, what I'm showing here is not exactly this delta omega function over here. It's actually the invert of the delta omega function, and then you take the square of it. So for example, if it's linear, then it means you get a standard quantum limit. And then if it's quadratic, then that means you get the Heisenberg limit. So this is the Heisenberg limit, and then this is a standard quantum limit. It is actually a scaling of a function called quantum fishing information that I don't have time to introduce here. So, okay. So basically, in all the other plots, you can see that first, in the second part, you can see that for any channel that does not satisfy the HNKS condition, you can no longer achieve the Heisenberg limit. So basically, there's like a strict line here. So you can no longer achieve the Heisenberg limit without the ability to do quantum error correction. So that's one important message here. Then the other important message is that there is a clear distinction between the defacing class channel of the first type and the defacing class channel of the second type. So you can see that if you have the defacing class channel of the first type, you can actually get the standard quantum limit. But then if you don't have that, you cannot even get a scaling that decrease with respect to the number of channels. So you sort of start with a constant. So it is different from before, because previously everything here achieved the standard quantum limit, but here you cannot even achieve the standard quantum limit if you have if your channel is too bad for sensing. So I don't have time to go to the details here. I'll just skip the proof part and directly go to the, this slide. So basically, this is what I already said. There's a distinction between Heisenberg limit and the standard quantum limit if you have full control. And then if you have other constraint, you have this new provable separation between quantum channels. Unitary channel, defacing, class channel of the first type, and then all the other channel. And then finally, there are some open problem. There's no separation that can be proven between all this restricted type of strategy, and then there's no distinction that can be found before these two type of opponent channel. So basically to summarize, the structure of the noise and the Hamiltonian determines the estimation precision limit in quantum metrology. And quantum error correction is powerful. It can help you to recover the Heisenberg limit and achieve the optimal asymptotic coefficient. And the other thing is that if you don't have quantum error correction in your system, the sensitivity limit is going to be compromised. And you have a new hierarchy of the estimation precision limit. So some future direction would include to consider like a noise in the quantum error correction procedure. So what I said previously is you can prepare like arbitrary input state, quantum control, and noise. So everything here is, everything of the control is noiseless, but if you also have control, noise in the control is going to be a headache. So you don't even know what's the optimal limit you can get here. And then I guess another thing is to consider instead of the asymptotic scaling, you can also consider what happens if you have like finite number of channels and then what's going to happen. And then of course there are other type of quantum signal and noise, for example, the correlating noise or signal between different subsystem, and like you can also consider like distributed sensing where you try to sense some general feature of a distributed signal which is different in different subsystems. So that's all.
Thank you, Cici. Yeah, so thank you. Do we have any questions from the audience?
So I'm just asking for clarification. I must have missed it. So you say the in estimation of, say, a magnetic field or so, you can recover the Heisenberg limit in the presence of decoherence due to error correction. Mm-hmm. So we could, for example, think, just for the sake of an example, we could think of, say, the 7-qubit Steen code, maybe concatenated, helping you with the task. But, I mean, doesn't the error correction remove the signal? So how do you deal with that? So I'm sure you addressed it, but I must have missed it.
Sorry. So I went too fast. So basically, here's why. So I have this HNKS condition. So it explains the situation where you correct the signal and then you don't correct the signal. So basically, if you want to correct like a bit flip noise, mm-hmm. and then the signal is like poly Z, then you actually won't correct all the signal. So it's like you correct all away all the X noise, but then you don't correct Z noise. So that's why you still have the Z Hamiltonian system. And then that's how you achieve the Heisenberg limit. But then if you have error as this Z error, then you actually will correct the Hamiltonian. So that's why you cannot use error correction in this case. And then you are not going to achieve the Heisenberg limit. So I guess then it depends on the structure between the signal and the error.
That's good. And this is where it still stands. This is the condition, the span condition.
This is
where it still stands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for
the
clarification.
Any other questions from the room? Well, I have a question, maybe two. Can I somehow think of this condition that's right up here as some sort of informational completeness of like the measurement defined by such a channel, like relative to the Hamiltonian?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly how, but I wonder, there's some formal similarity there.
So you mean kind of like the tomography type of thing, or?
Well, I just mean like if you measured those Krauss operators, the condition that H is in their span is somewhat analogous to, if you measure a density matrix and the Krauss operators span the whole space, or the measurement operators do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think it's like somehow related, because basically, for example, if you want to do error correction, you need to measure all the, this noise operator, and
right.
then somehow, if the Hamiltonian is not in the span, you will not affect the signal that is not going to be measured, and,
right.
and that's how you can accumulate the signal in the system. Yeah. So.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe one other question. There's also like maybe some kind of an analogy, or I wonder if there's an analogy, but there's at least a formal similarity with reference frames.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like especially where there could be this like quadratic versus linear scaling, but it's slightly different. It's in terms of how like the longevity of the frame, like before it becomes useless. You have like a large spin J or something.
Mm-hmm.
You're measuring individual spins.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, so actually, I do think it's highly related to the research on reference frame, because, for example, like this Hamiltonian or unitary absorption here, you can view it as some kind of, like you want symmetry or frame in your system, and then
mm-hmm.
whether or not you can detect it, basically, yeah, I remember people generalized that to a theory of like error correction for reference frame. It's like if you have reference frame and then you try to send signal between Alice and Bob, and then whether or not you can do error correction. And then this is exactly what you would get in that situation. So So basically I think it's exactly like a highly related research fields, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Are there any questions? Oh, there's one in the back.
It's also on the current slide. So if I can understand it correctly, it seems like you're asking for the Hamiltonian to be, well, at least part of the Hamiltonian to be a logical operator with respect to the code. Because
mm-hmm.
if you have your like particular code and it's set up to correct some errors, so the only things that you could sort of maintain under the error correction should be like the things that are the logical operators.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So for example, if you have a code and then the distance of the code is like d, then the only thing you can detect is like this some operator that exactly have weight d, so it's like if you have like weight smaller than d, then you can be like somehow corrected. So so that's exactly what this tells us.
So my follow-up is, in my head I would think that mm-hmm. the condition would be that it was a logical operator, but I'm from what you've written down, I'm not like, is, because in the exact two examples you give,
mm-hmm.
the entire Hamiltonian, because it's just z in each one,
mm-hmm.
is either like in the span or not in the span.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, if it was sort of, you know, some series of terms,
mm-hmm.
it feels like some of them could be error terms and some of them could not be. And you would only, like only the ones that are not correctable would actually be like appear in the signal.
Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So even if it doesn't seem that like it would be in the span if there are parts of the Hamiltonian that are out, but it doesn't seem like you would be able to measure the entire Hamiltonian then, only the bit of the Hamiltonian that's like not overlapping with the error.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a good question. So okay. So yeah, I'll just see if I have that on the slide. Yeah, maybe I don't have it. So this is a very good point. So if you have some kind of error and then you have a Hamiltonian which have both the component inside the span and outside the span, then what's going to happen is that the component inside the span is going to be completely like corrected or removed. And then the detection of the signal is going to completely depend on the rest of the signal in the system. So it's like if you write down like this coefficient over here is going to be some kind of distance from the Hamiltonian to the noise band. So if the distance of the Hamiltonian to the noise band is like pretty small, then the coefficient is also going to be pretty small. But since we only care about this asymptotic behavior, so it does not affect the scaling, but the, it affects like how large the asymptotic coefficient is.
Okay, but wouldn't there just be some information about the Hamiltonian that you could like never get?
I'm sorry.
Like if there's a term in the Hamiltonian that overlaps with the error, it feels to me that no matter how high n is, you wouldn't be able to determine it.
Yeah, exactly. So then basically you are only going to get a standard quantum limit here. But then again, the coefficient is also important. So if you have some Hamiltonian inside the crossband, but then it doesn't mean like you are going to stuck with like the product state as the optimal input. So you can still do some error correction, and then it will help you improve the asymptotic coefficient. So it's like a constant improvement, but then it's still some improvement, and sometimes it can be large if the noise is small. So it is like inversely proportional to the noise. So I think this is like proportional to the square root of the noise, so this coefficient over here. But if you only care about the asymptotic scaling, then that's what you would get, yeah.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from anybody online? Otherwise, I think there's another question here, or?
Thank you for the very clear talk. I was wondering, in practice, is it natural to think that this kind of HNKS condition is like very sensitive and probably going to be violated by most noise models? Like, for example, with the simple qubit case, I guess even if we introduced like a very, very tiny probability of a Z error, that alone would be enough to kind of spoil the correctability in this case. Would that be right?
Yeah. That's totally correct. And but then still, quantum error correction would also help in this case. The reason is that basically, if you have some kind of like bias noise, like some small probability of getting like Z error here, and then some large probability of getting X error here, then basically by doing error correction, you can correct away the dominant source of the noise, and then you have this small noise, and then even though you cannot achieve the Heisenberg limit, you can still get some kind of enhancement by reduce the like the dominant source of the noise in the system, and then you only have a smaller noise or weak noise in the other direction. But then you cannot use this asymptotic theory to describe the behavior. But like quantitatively, you are going to have some kind of improvement in the sensitivity by doing error correction. Yeah.
I see. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Maybe time for one more question. If not, so thanks a lot, Cici, for the very interesting talk.
Yeah, thank you.